Coming up on the pod, the slugger, his interpreter, the gambler, and the feds. We're talking an update in my take on the Shohei Ohtani gambling saga. It goes on and on, regardless of what MLB wants to do by trying to bury this story. It's alive, and more questions need to be answered. There are some things that just don't make sense. We're also talking about athletes who should sometimes just shut up. Now, I'm not talking about LeBron James and shut up and dribble as some stupid politicians told him to do a number of years ago. I'm talking about sometimes people, regardless of the platform that they have, they should show a bit of respect to other professional athletes who have earned their right to be professional athletes. Trying to knock him down a peg? I just don't get it. Sometimes you just need to let it go, shut up, play the game, compete. We're also going to do a little Masters recap on what was, in my opinion, the most boring Masters golf tournament in recent history. I'm flying solo. This is Talking Balls. Let's do this. Welcome to the podcast. I'm flying solo this week. I didn't want to bother friends and family again for their insights. Sometimes it's just too much work. And also, I'm really disorganized sometimes. I found by doing this podcast, I'm not as organized as I think, and I actually need producer extraordinaire Owen O'Connor to keep me on the straight and narrow, because I don't organize people to come on the podcast, and all of a sudden I'm scrambling to find a guest to talk balls with, but I'm pretty good at talking to myself. So that's what I'm going to do. Hopefully there's some listeners there, so I'm not truly talking to myself. Anyway, I indicated in the intro that I was going to talk about this Shohei Ohtani gambling saga, and I called it The Slugger, His Interpreter, The Gambler, and The Feds. And that's a takeoff on a film that was out in the, early 90s? The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover. Really good movie if you haven't seen it. Fabulous. Helen Mirren is in it. She's always awesome. And it's a good film. So I took that off, and I thought I did pretty good. I think that sounds pretty good. So the story now is that a huge report has been filed by the feds that says Shohei Ohtani is completely innocent of everything. He knew nothing about any of Ippei's gambling. He didn't know anything about the money being taken out of his account to pay off illegal bookmakers. He knew nothing. He's completely innocent of any illegal activity. The man knew nothing. So I know some people are going to say I'm becoming part of the tinfoil hat brigade, but I'm not a conspiracy theorist. But there's a couple of questions that I need answered. Seriously. It is reported that the interpreter, Ippei Mitsuhara, lost over the, 3 to 4 year time period, $180 million. And he had winnings of $140 million. So you guys can do the math. The guy's down $40 million. And apparently he took $16 million out of Shohei's account to pay off some of the debt. He's still down $24 million. $24 million. So in essence, a professional illegal gambler bookmaker has provided an interpreter who apparently now the guy's makes 200 grand a year for his services as an interpreter. A bookmaker provided him with a line of $40 million, and he makes 200 grand a year. Are we serious? Bookmakers are in it to make money. They wouldn't give a line of $40 million in losses to a guy who's only making 200 grand a year. The fucking banks, even in their worst times, weren't giving out loans to people who are only making 200,000 of $40 million. Okay? No. So the feds are actually trying to tell us, and MLB, who have completely supported these findings from the feds, that yeah, Shohei knew nothing about this, that 16 million went missing. Now it's conceivable that Ippe had total control over his bank account. All right. He was an interpreter. He translated everything in English, and that includes baseball stuff to money matters to daily life from English to Japanese. That's what the guy does. All right. So it's conceivable that, yes, he did have the control and the ability to access Shohei's account. But I don't care who you are, how much money you have. I'm not a rich man. But I have a rough idea of how much is in my bank account. I have a rough idea of how much I spend. But even if I was on psychotic money like Shohei through endorsements, salary, etc., you would think that you'd know if 16 million had gone missing, even over a couple of year period. Wouldn't you? God, maybe I should have had more people on this pod so we can just argue this and talk this out, because it just doesn't make sense to me. Secondly, Ippe is a criminal mastermind. It has to be said. Absolute criminal mastermind that he was able to develop a relationship with this bookmaker who's running an illegal operation. He was actually able to say, yeah, I'm only making this amount of money, but I'm good for the 40 mil. The guy must be not just a great interpreter, but a tremendous salesman, that he had developed such a relationship that a bookmaker who's in it solely for money said, yeah, I figure you're good for it, even though you're only making 200K a year. Again, someone please explain that to me, because it's just not making sense. Thirdly, Ippe is an incredible scumbag if this is all true. All right. He stole from his quote unquote best friend in the world $16 million. I don't care who you are or what problems you have, to actually take that kind of money from somebody who has entrusted everything to you to steal from them, he's a scumbag. All right. If indeed this is all true. But the one question that I have is, how can a guy like Ippe, who has stolen $16 million from his best friend in the whole world, how can a guy be that ruthless and gamble away so much money, not bet on baseball in that entire period? Which is another finding of the Fed's report. Of all the gambling that took place, we're talking over a 3-4 year period, bets ranging from $10 to $180,000 per bet. How in the name of God are you going to convince me that he didn't bet on baseball? Are you telling me that a guy that is such a scumbag that would steal all that money from his best friend, keep this secret from his family, his friends, the world, and all of a sudden he takes the moral high ground and says, you know what? For all the badness that I am involved with, I'm not going to bet on baseball because that's the wrong thing to do. Again, come on, come on. It's the one thing that he might have some insight on, and it's the one sport and activity that he could actually place bets in which he would win. He has come out in text messages to state, I'm not very good at this sports betting thing. Yeah, we got that, Ippe. You've lost $40 million. So, to turn your luck, would you never consider betting on something that you actually know something about, that you have inside information on? Are you telling me that this guy, I'm getting hysterical thinking about this. He decided that he didn't want to bring the game of baseball into disrepute so he wouldn't gamble on the games because it would be the wrong thing to do. Even though he's obviously got a real problem with gambling, he's stolen millions and millions from his best friend. He has lied to his best friend and family for years. But according to the Fed's report, he never bet on a baseball game, not once. Of all the wagers that were placed, he never bet on a baseball game. Again, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I can tell you right now, if I needed to try to get on a winning streak or turn those losses into wins, I'd be betting on stuff that I knew about. I'd be betting on stuff that I had the inside dope on. And if I thought I heard something in the Dodgers clubhouse that might help me win a bet and try to erase losses of 40 million with a gangster, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. You know, I'm not a gambling guy, but if I was in that big a hole, you bet your sweet ass that I'm going to try to lay a bet on something that I knew something about, as opposed to, God almighty, doing the over-under on Atalanta and Fiorentina. Come on. Seriously. We're supposed to believe all this. Again, I'm not part of the tinfoil hat brigade, but this just does not hold water with me. I'm wondering what you guys think. But the saga will go on, and hopefully more investigations will take place, and we'll hear more stuff about how Shohei knew nothing about this, and how Ippe never bet on baseball games, and it's just going to go away because the feds are going to prosecute this guy, and then he's going to go away for years. And I'm still wondering if he's still down 24 million. Are they going to collect? And if so, how? Through his bank account or him? Ippe, dude, you seem like a nice guy. Then you turned into a villain scumbag. And now I kind of feel sorry for you, dude, because it is not looking good for your future. It is not looking good. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Okay, so the 2024 Masters Golf Tournament concluded this past weekend, and Scottie Scheffler was the outright winner. Was it ever in doubt? Not really. He was the heavy odds-on favorite going into the tournament to claim his second Masters title, and he did the business. Fair play to him. He is a truly fantastic golfer. Physically, great. He's got all the shots. Drive the ball, approach, chipping, putting. My God, he does it all. He is actually, I was speaking to a friend about this, and the word to use to describe him would be relentless. Whereas others are slapping the ball around the course, missing a few fairways and greens. Not Scotty. Scotty just lines it up, laces it right down the middle, marches on, holes his putts, gets on with it. He puts you under so much pressure that the inevitability of that tournament was something that, in my mind, made it one of the most boring and awful to watch sporting events that I have seen in a very long time. And maybe that's what golf really is. I hope not. The great thing about Scottie Scheffler, and I'm not taking away from him because he is a fantastic golfer, aside from the physical attributes that he brings and the quality, he has an incredibly strong mental game. He's Tiger in that way, insofar as his focus is so great that it appears nothing can break him. So to put it in perspective, I watch all the major golf tournaments, even though they're on in the middle of the night, except for the British Open, which is obviously our same time zone here in Ireland, and watch them to the end. I stay up because they're like Christmas. They come but once a year, and they're usually exciting to keep my interest. But this time, when Scheffler putted out on 15, that's it. I said, it's done. It's over. He was up by three shots. There was an inevitability to his victory that just put me off, pushing myself to stay up another 30 minutes to see him crowned Masters champion. Like I say, I'm not taking away from Scottie Scheffler. He's fantastic. But it was like a slow death march for all the other players. Like Homa had a good run at it. Åberg, he had a good run at it. You could see Morikawa. He just started to wilt under the pressure, finished at four under when he was at one point even with Scotty, and he just couldn't keep the pace. And although that's cool, and I know other times in history at the majors and at the Masters, there have been runaway winners, but at least when they were playing, let's say it was Tiger, or Bubba Watson, there was some emotion involved in the victory. Like Scotty is so focused, and perhaps this is what makes him so great. He never gets too high, never gets too low. It's so even keel. But from a viewing perspective, it's awful. It's just feckin' awful. Like there's no fist pumping, there's no throwing the club after a great shot. There's no massive fist bumping. There's no trying to rally the crowd and get them behind you, trying to get the patrons to pull for you. That was the great thing about Tiger. That was the great thing about Rory at the Ryder Cup. These guys play with a bit of emotion, get people involved. Now, Scotty's brilliant. And so many of the golfers today are terrific golfers. And I could never aspire to be like them because it's an impossibility. But what I'm hoping to get when I'm watching sports is some level of relatability. Like Tyrrell Hatton, that's why I like him. Because he Fs and blinds and he slams his club down the odd time. And when he hits a good shot, he starts throwing high fives and he pumps his fist. Like, he's kind of like me. He's kind of like our friends when we go out golfing. But some of these new generation golfers, and I'm not playing the old guy card here, but oh my God, come on. Patrick Cantlay, this guy is like as dead a human being with a golf club in his hand that I've ever seen. I think it was on the Friday, he holed out from 160 yards for an eagle. I think it was the only eagle in the first couple of days. And there was nothing. There was no excitement. There was no hands raised above him, trying to rally the crowd, trying to get excited. There was a light fist pump with his caddy. That was the extent of it. That's as much joy that it seemed to bring this guy. And as a result, I just thought, I don't want to watch this. This is awful. I want to see people get excited and be happy when they're competing. I want to see somebody smile. Like, that's why I always wondered what is going through the heads of marathon runners. You know, the only time that marathon runners actually smile is when they finish, when they're done. They don't appear to have any type of enjoyment or happiness when they're actually participating or competing. It's when they've finished that they actually show some sort of happiness or joy. I don't know. Maybe I'm just different. I just figure if you're going to do something and commit to be the best you can at it, that you should enjoy it, and not just enjoy the process. Like there has to be some sort of fun and happiness when you do stuff, especially when you're getting paid to do it. I mean, I'd like to think that when I go into work or when I work at home or when I'm doing work, that I have a laugh and I smile and I enjoy other people's company and I like to do well. I like challenges. I enjoy it. I show emotion. I smile. These guys don't do any of that. Oh, God, old man yelling at clouds. You damn clouds. Bring back the days of Seve Ballesteros. Remember him? I mean, hit the ball out of the trap, roll it in. giving it large, the fist pump, the clubs flinging, raising the arms, trying to get the crowd going. Those are the days. That was fun. Why can't we have more of those guys? Stop being so fucking serious. Enjoy it. Have fun. Be relatable so that we actually want to support you, not just because you're good, but because you're having fun. Try it. Just maybe once. Try it. We'll be back. There's been a couple of instances recently where I thought, why do people have to be so mean? Why can't people just get along? You know, there's a time for trash talk, and then there's a time to, show a bit of respect. Case in point, Padres played the Dodgers last weekend in a series in Los Angeles, of which my San Diego Padres took 2 of 3. Super series, lads. Well done. And in one of the games, I believe it was game two, Padres' Jerickson Profar was up at the plate. And whilst facing a pitcher who, I think this is the fifth inning, was throwing a perfect game. All right. Pitch comes in a bit high and tight. Jerickson overreacts a little bit, takes exception, kind of glares out at the mound like, what are you doing, dude? Come on. Are you trying to hit me? And at that time, the catcher, Will Smith of the Dodgers, kind of confronted him. And I'm sure the conversation went like, what are you doing? Shut up. Just get in the box. He's not throwing at you. He's throwing a perfect game. He's not going to hit you. And Profar probably came back with, listen, that was too tight. It's up near my head. Don't let that happen again. Anyway, benches cleared. It was handbags. Nothing happened. Blah, blah, blah. Game finishes. And after the game, Will Smith was asked by a reporter, was that ball thrown up near Profar's head, was it intentional? And Smith says, of course it wasn't intentional. Why would we throw at Jerickson Profar? He's kind of irrelevant. Or some fans think that's hilarious. Ha ha ha, he called a guy irrelevant. Whereas a lot of people thought, well, wait a minute, irrelevant? Let's take it down a notch. Do you know what I mean? First of all, talking about other players on other teams usually isn't a good idea. Just shut your mouth. It's bulletin board material. And the only thing they can really do is motivate the players and the other team. All right. They still had another game to go in this series. So, like, why add petrol to the fire when there's no need to? All right. Secondly, calling a guy like Jerickson Profar irrelevant is, I hate using the term disrespectful, but it is disrespectful. The guy has been in the show for 10 years. 10 years he's been playing at the highest level. Now, is Jerickson Profar a perennial all-star? No. Is he going to go to the Hall of Fame? Absolutely not. Has he put together a stellar career with highlights galore? No, not really. But he's a solid pro. He's been a bounce around town, solid utility man who does the job that he's paid to do. So I figure anybody who's played professional sport for 10 years doesn't deserve respect. He has earned that respect. And the comments were made by Will Smith, who's without doubt one of the best young catchers in professional baseball. But Jerickson Profar has a lot more experience than you do. And Jerickson came up in the next game with the bases loaded while you were sitting behind the plate, and he pounded a high fastball off the center field wall, scoring 3 runs, which actually ended up being the game-winning RBI. So Jerickson took all that Mr. Irrelevant talk, slipped it into his back pocket, and brought it out in a late-inning game with the pressure on and delivered. Doesn't sound irrelevant to me, but it just goes to my point. Sometimes you just shut your mouth and play the game. There's no need to be a dickhead. Just get on with it. You could have easily said, no, we weren't trying to hit him. My guy's going for a perfect game. Why would we hit a guy? That's all you had to say. But you had to come out with the Mr. Irrelevant quote because you thought you were cute. Well, you're not cute. You're just being a dick. And that will be remembered. In fact, for the last 3 days, all I've heard is reverberations of the new nickname for Jerks and Profar is Mr. Relevant. They're not talking about you, Willie. They're not talking about you. Speaking about people who are talking about other people, we're going to go back to one of my favorite girls in sports, Caitlin Clark. Now, young Caitlin, congratulations. She was drafted number one in the WNBA draft earlier this week. She went number one to the Indiana Fever. And once she was selected, the ticket sales throughout all the visiting arenas in which she will be playing, because the schedule's been posted, they've all become sellouts. The girl has not taken a shot in the WNBA, and yet all the arenas that she will be visiting next season are sellouts, so fans can see her play. Now, the reason I bring this up is because, one, that's quite remarkable that a girl who is yet to play is having that type of impact on the league already. She's already bringing in tremendous financial benefits to not just her team, but opposing teams and indeed the league. And there were comments before the draft by Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird, who are, I guess I'll call them legends of the WNBA. They've been around for a long time, won titles, won Olympic gold medals. They're going to be in the Hall of Fame for the WNBA. They are truly superstars of the league. And their comments towards Caitlin Clark were that she was going to get a rude awakening when she enters the WNBA. In other words, she's not going to find it easy. She's going to get roughed up, and she's going to find out what real basketball is all about. Okay? So basically, they stated, look, this punk kid is going to come into the league, and she's going to find out how tough it really is. And we are going to do everything in our power to make her life miserable. Okay? That goes without saying, girls. It goes without saying. The WNBA has the best women basketball players on the planet. Of course she's going to get a tough time. Of course it's going to be more difficult than her rolling into Northwestern to play a game in January in college. Of course it is. But why do you have to make it such a big deal and take away from what she has accomplished and what she will undoubtedly accomplish? Couldn't you be complimentary? Like, it's great to see her coming into the league. I can't wait to compete against her and see what she's got. I should write this stuff for some of these people. But no, they had to take a shot at her. Like, we know what we're doing because we're veterans and we're the ones who built this, blah, blah, blah. I tell you, what you haven't done and what this young lady has already done, you never made the league relevant. Nobody cares about the WNBA except a very, very small percentage of the population. And that's a shame. It really is, because the athleticism and the abilities of the athletes within the WNBA is fantastic. They're the best women players on the planet. And yet, even with that, you, for all your medals, Diana Taurasi, and for all your plaudits and for all your awards, you could never, ever make women's professional basketball watchable. You could never make it profitable. The NBA subsidizes the WNBA. If the NBA did not subsidize it, there would be no professional women's basketball league. I'm telling you that for nothing. So perhaps you should be slightly thankful that this young lady has generated such interest in the women's game. Again, I'll point out the women's national championship game from this year, featuring Iowa and South Carolina, had more viewers than the men's national final, featuring UConn and Purdue. Let that sink in. This one woman, and don't get me started, there are some other great players with South Carolina. Cardozo is a fantastic player. She's going to do really well in WNBA, but it was really one woman, Caitlin Clark, who made that happen. And now she's coming into a league, and she's actually got an opportunity. The league has an opportunity to become relevant, to possibly become profitable. And it's her that's making this happen. Not you, Diana Taurasi, not you, Sue Bird, who I might add, the last ad that I saw her in with Larry Bird and a couple other NBA stars, they actually had to say who she was in the ad because she's so unrecognizable. Because nobody gives a fuck who you are. Because you didn't do anything to make women's basketball at the professional level watchable. It's on you. So cut this young lady some slack. Yes, compete hard. Yes, try to bury her on the court. But don't diss her in public. Don't diss her before she's even got a chance to take a shot in the WNBA. Because quite frankly, this woman's going to carry the league forward. And if it has a chance to survive, be profitable, to be relevant, this young lady could make that happen. She's the golden goose. You better fucking feed her. So that's it. Go, Caitlin. Go, girl. Go. God, why can't these people? Why do they have to drag people down? Just shut your mouth. Get some media training. They should all watch Bull Durham. You know, I'm just happy to be there. I'm just here to help the team win. Simple phrases. You don't have to be Stephen A. Smith every time you fucking grab a mic or you're asked for a quote. Just be simple about it. Say something intelligent, if possible. And move on, but don't tear people down just for the sake of your ego, just for the sake of thinking that you're cool and you're all that, because you're not. All your awards, all your money, all your supposed fame is nothing, nothing if you're not doing something for the betterment of your sport, your community. And those around you. There, I said it. Huh. Rock on, Caitlin. Rock on. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to put this baby to bed. Okay, that's going to do it for the pod. I want to thank everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed that solo flight by Mike. Although, to tell you the truth, I don't like doing it by myself. I'd rather have other people involved. It's funner. It's better when you could talk balls with other people. So, sometimes needs must. So I'll have somebody else on the next time. Maybe I'll have two people. I still haven't done that. Little menage a trois about basketball. Owen, do you think you'd be interested? We just have to find somebody else who might like to take the jump. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Later.